Welcome back to the program. When we look at a photograph or a piece of art, there are usually two imaginations at work, the artist or photographer as well as the viewer, whose interpretation gives the work life, energy, and meaning. My guest, author and filmmaker Marissa Silver, has taken a single iconic photograph, The Migrant Mother by Dorothea Lange, as her inspiration for her own story and her own interpretation of a story that now allows us to bring our imagination and understanding to her novel, Mary Coyne. Marissa Silver is an author, screenwriter, and film director. Her work as a director includes the films He Said, She Said, and Permanent Record. Her novels include Babe in Paradise and The God of War. It is my pleasure to welcome Marissa Silver here to talk about her latest work, Mary Coyne. Marissa, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. I want to talk first about your history as a filmmaker yourself, coming from a long line of filmmakers, your husband is a filmmaker, and bringing that visual element, the way it influenced you in taking a photograph and turning that into a novel. Talk about that nexus between the visual and the literary.
Sure. Well, for me, I would say that the experience that I have in film that really impacted this book was my earliest filmmaking experience, which was as a documentary filmmaker. And I had made a film with another filmmaker named Ricky Leacock about a family of fundamental Christians living in Indiana. This was back in 1980. And I think that when I made that film with him, we spent about 3 months living with that family and making a very sort of cinema verite film about them. I really recognized then and on reflection looking back how unequal the partnership is between the subject and the in this case filmmakers. You come to a subject and you want to be objective and you want to sort of not lay a judgment on it, but of course, every choice you make aesthetically, what you choose to film, what you choose to edit in and keep out, are choices that belie some kind of judgment. So the person who's, having that film made of them, agrees to that, but the question is, do they really understand the level to which they have been exposed or that they will be exposed? I'm not sure that anybody can really understand what the effect of having, a film made about them and shown to millions of people on public television will be. Most of us don't have that experience to draw from. So I think I understood back then, that there was kind of an uneasy bargain drawn between the artist and the subject. And that is really the kind of primary part of my filmmaking experience that I brought to writing this book, which is very much about the ripple effects that this moment has for both of these women who have been involved in the making of this photograph.
And as you point out, it's not only a creative choice, an artistic choice, that in things like this photograph and in documentaries, there's also a moral choice that's sometimes at play.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a moral choice for, many, many artists. I don't think that art necessarily needs to be moral in some particular, somebody's version of good morality, but I think that one can't ignore that making a piece of art, choosing what to show, choosing the way in which you show it, has moral implications and that it has sort of an ethical outcome. So I think that, anybody working in those fields, especially if you're using real life to make your art out of, can't really ignore the fact that there are moral complications that ensue.
Then, of course, there's the issue of interpretation and how somebody else sees that piece of work, that documentary, or in this case, a particular photograph, and what one takes away from it.
Right. I mean, I think one of the things that most interested me about writing this book was to think about the way in which history is interpreted and repurposed and, mythologized and all the rest of it, that what really happened in a moment in time is sort of the least of it in terms of how we understand that moment. So much is brought to bear, the context in which we live, the social and ethical mores of our time, which may have been very different from what was going on at that time. So, history isn't just, fact. It's sort of fact interpreted, fact repurposed, fact reimagined, which is very much what was interesting to me about taking on this photograph in terms of fiction, because it gave me a chance to repurpose and reimagine a moment in time.
The other aspect is the degree to which history itself, while dynamic and fluid and all of those other things, is for most of us, and in terms of memory especially, a series of moments, individual things that trigger other thoughts of a particular time and place. It is about those moments in so many respects.
Absolutely, and I think what you said is triggering other thoughts about time and place. It's what are all what is the resonance of a moment for a person emotionally? It's not simply about the fact of the moment. It has to do with what you bring to it emotionally.
Talk a little bit about this photograph for those of our listeners that may not be familiar with it, The Migrant Mother by Dorothea Lange.
Absolutely. It's a photograph that shows a woman holding a baby with two of her children crowding in on either side of her, and they are sort of turned facing away from the camera. And the woman has a very enigmatic expression on her face, and she's sort of looking off, not directly at the camera, but off and a little bit down. And it's sort of the, you know, iconic image of the Great Depression. It's certainly an image that is evoked, every time the Depression is evoked, somehow that image comes into play. It became, in, I think, the American conscience, sort of the image of the Depression. And it is a very powerful image, not simply because of the poverty and the desperation, but I think also because the woman's face has a kind of grit and enduring quality that I think speaks also to sort of the fact that people, you know, get through hard times one way or another. And so it's really a magnetic image. It's hard to turn your face from, and obviously it's lingered in the consciousness of America for, you know, over a century.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the grit and determination, but there's also a sense of resignation, a sense of exhaustion that goes along with that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's what's so rich about the photograph is that it's all those things put into play. She looks utterly beaten down, but at the same time, she kind of looks like she will manage by hook and by crook to get through this and, you know, with her children. So, and I think the image is also incredibly evocative to us because it really does fall into the patterning of all the Mother Mary images, the Madonna holding the baby and, you know, with the two angels on either side of her. It's a strangely evocative image that has been with us for centuries in a funny way, even though the image was only taken in the early 30s. So there's something very powerful about it, and it really registers with people.
The other power of the image, which you use in Mary Coyne, is that the children in the picture are looking away from her.
Yeah, it was really interesting. When Dorothea Lange took the actual photograph, she took about six photographs at the time when she came upon this woman and her children. And she sort of successively moved closer and closer towards them. And at the final moment, right before she took that last photograph, she had the children turn around. And, you know, I don't know what her instinct was. I mean, in the book Mary Coyne, I certainly give her a motivation for doing that. I don't know what Dorothea Lange's particular motivation was, but, you know, if you try to think of what the photograph would look like if the children's faces were showing, it seems like it would be less powerful in a certain way. There's something about not seeing their faces that allows the viewer to imagine their faces, and that imagining is very, very powerful, I think.
Also, one could argue that the children looking away is really about the future, is a sense of hope, perhaps, that those children have.
Maybe. I don't think I've ever felt that, because I feel like, to me, what it says is that their mother is protecting them. I don't know, there's just something very protective about the image with those children looking away. And there's something about the backs of their necks that's so poignant, you know, these mm-hmm. thin stalks. It sort of speaks of innocence and, you know, these children who were born at that time and are suffering through some of the ravages of that time for no other reason than that's when they happen to have been born. So for me, it's sort of the poignancy of their youth.
Talk a little bit about the research that you did with respect to the actual photograph and what you found out about Florence Owens Thompson, who was the subject of the original photograph, and the way that did or didn't shape where you took this story.
Sure. I mean, that was sort of the first point of entry, was trying to find out the story of the real people involved. And there's lots to be known about Dorothea Lange. There's been two marvelous biographies written about her, and there's an enormous, you know, every time you read about the history of photography, especially in America, she's evoked. There was very, very much less to know about Florence Owens Thompson, and you know, what little I could glean about her that had been printed or written about was sort of the same sort of handful of facts that were gone over and over again. I guess if someone were to make a job of writing the biography of that woman, you could go and track down all her forebears and her ancestors, you know, her great-grandchildren and try to piece it together, but since I was writing fiction, I didn't really need to do that. And what I found about her was that she was born Cherokee. She lived in eastern Oklahoma. She grew up on a subsistence farm, and that she did marry a young man there, and they moved to California before the Depression. People often conflate that image with the Dust Bowl, but in fact they came out to California much before the Dust Bowl, and they began by working in timber mills, and then when the Depression hit, they started, they took to the road as migrant farmers, and she had, I think, 10 children, although in my book, Mary Coyne has 7. And so those are kind of the bare facts of what I could learn about her. And so there wasn't a lot, but it was sort of enough, you know. It gave me a real sense of momentum. And then with both women, you know, once I had sort of the facts of their lives and I found the pieces of their lives that I wanted to use in my fiction, then I really moved away from the real people and moved into these, you know, Mary Coyne and Vera Dare, who's the photographer in the book. Right. Because I felt like, you know, I'm not telling the story of these real people. I certainly wouldn't have known what they felt or went through. But I really wanted to invest my characters with, you know, interiorities and emotions and, you know, all sorts of events that may or may not have happened to the real people. So I really took it to a fictional level. Not simply because I, you know, didn't want to pretend to know what those women felt, but I also felt like, you know, the writing the fiction was an act of interpretation in as much as looking at a photograph is an act of interpretation, what you said right up at the front of this interview. And so for me to write the book and to be able to sort of invent on top of the facts was somehow parallel to the act of looking at a photograph.
In that sense, it may have been better that there was less known about the history of this and about Florence Owens Thompson. As you say, the bare bones was enough.
The bare bones was enough to let my sort of imagination take flight, you know, and it sort of some wonderful details that I used. I mean, I used quite a bit from, you know, the life of Dorothea Lange. You know, she grew up and she had childhood polio and she had lived in New York and New Jersey, and then she came across the country to San Francisco and became a society photographer before she began to photograph people during the Depression. So a lot of the things that she went through in her life I found to be really very resonant and were great sort of jumping off points for my fiction.
It also goes to the heart of the power of photography, but it also, one thinks about it in the context of today where we photograph everything. Where photographs become the coin of the realm, especially for even people younger than we are, that everything is photographed, from the food people are eating to just everything they do during the course of their day.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, my God, it's ubiquitous. But I think what's sort of interesting is that, you know, photography has become so commonplace that we forget that it is an interpretation and that we assume that what we're seeing is somehow the quote-unquote truth. But, you know, everything is an interpretation because you're choosing to, you know, why did you choose to photograph that meal? I mean, something as banal as photographing your meal, there's a story behind that. There's something to be said about that choice versus why didn't you photograph the people you were eating the meal with, you know? So I think that I guess what I'm sort of interested in is not taking images at face value, but to sort of try to look beyond the frames of the images and to think about what the choices are that come to bear upon making any single image.
And what really represents the history, you know, which image at a particular point in time really represents the history of that moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think of all that we don't see. Think of all that isn't photographed or captured on film that we don't know about. So, yeah, I mean, our understanding of history is only, you know, is very partial.
Right. I mean, as one of the characters in your novel talks about, that there's this difference between looking and seeing, essentially.
Yeah, there's a character, and the third character in the novel who anchors the book is a contemporary historian named Walker Dodge, and he teaches sort of social history. His interest is in how the bits and pieces of the past can be looked at to try to construct what life was like in the past. And through the course of the novel, he finds his way into the photograph and discovers some personal connection with the photograph. And what he's very interested in, the idea of sort of, you know, looking deeper, looking beyond the superficial and the surfaces of things in order to really understand what the secret messages of images or objects are.
When you look at that photograph today, how is it different for you, having lived with it, having written Mary Coyne?
Oh, that's such a great question. You know, I think the photograph still stands as it always did for me because I understood very much that I was making an invention. I'm certainly not telling the story of that particular photograph I invented on top of that story. So it still stands for me as mysterious in a funny way as it ever did, because the story that I invented for it is an interpretation, but it is not the only interpretation. So I think it still retains the kind of enigmatic power for me that it always has.
Marissa Silver, her new novel is Mary Coyne. Marissa, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll take a break. I'll be right back.